the Chinese government has been bullying countries and international officials, including UN officials, to not criticize it.
The United Nations tries to do something about China's treatment of part of its population. It's Thursday, July 11th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melbourne in Washington. Also ahead, a potential multi-billion dollar arms sale to Taiwan is drawing very strong criticism from the mainland. Hong Kong protests are proving mental hardships for many participants. It's all on today's VOA Asia. 22 members of the United Nations Human Rights Council have signed a joint letter leveling criticism against China's actions in its own Xinjiang region. The UN's own experts, along with many other reports, say China is housing about a million Uyghurs and other Muslims in detention camps in the western area. China claims those being held are terrorists and are being educated in what they are calling vocational training centers. I spoke about this letter from the UN with Lou Charbonneau, the UN Director for Human Rights Watch. He explained via Skype what he says is China's efforts to have other nations shy away from criticism of its actions.
The Chinese government has been bullying countries and international officials, including UN officials, to not criticize it. Countries have been very reluctant. Countries in the region and around the world have been very reluctant to openly criticize China because of its economic clout. If you anger the Chinese government because of what it's doing in Xinjiang and these massive human rights abuses, which have nothing to do with counterterrorism and everything to do with the persecution of an ethnic minority across the entire Xinjiang region, if you do that, then the Chinese government will threaten retaliation.
Why would just more countries signing on have any further effect than has already happened?
What's important here is that the number of countries that are willing to put their names on this is growing. And we hope that the number of countries that have signed on to this particular statement will continue to grow because it's still open for signing. We would like to see a country like Turkey signing on as well because they have been outspoken in the past and they have been threatened with retaliation by the Chinese government. We're not expecting that this is going to push Beijing to close the camps tomorrow, but it is increasing the cost for the Chinese government. But there's still a lot more that we need to be done. We've had a few countries raising the issue in, for example, the Security Council, and we're not holding our breath for the Security Council to do anything because China has a veto there, which they don't have in the Human Rights Council. But we would like more discussion of it in the Security Council. Germany and the U.S. raised it recently, and according to media reports, the Chinese delegation was furious about it. We would also like the Human Rights Council to create a fact-finding mission so that we can know exactly what's going on in these camps and also get details on other human rights abuses in the Xinjiang region. The High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, has been negotiating with the Chinese government on the terms of access for a visit to the camps, but so far they haven't been able to reach an agreement. We were quite disappointed that Secretary General Antonio Guterres decided to send his top counterterrorism official, Under Secretary General Voronkov, to visit the camps, confirming China's false narrative that this is about counterterrorism and not about human rights abuses on a scale that has not been seen since the days of the Soviet gulags. By sending a counterterrorism official as the first high-level UN official to Xinjiang, it's helping to bolster the Chinese narrative that this is about fighting terrorism. That is not the case. What we have here is human rights abuses, and that's why Michelle Bachelet needs to be able to go there with her team of experts on terms that she considers acceptable so that they can make a credible and independent evaluation of what's going on. So we would like the Secretary General to tell the Chinese government to make sure she gets the terms that she wants.
I'm looking at the countries that are signatories to the agreement so far. See a bunch of them, but I don't see the United States. What's the situation there?
There are many countries missing that should be there. The U.S. has been speaking out about it, but they should sign on. I would certainly hope that the Trump administration would not allow the fact that it pulled out of the UN Human Rights Council last year in a very short-sighted decision because they thought that the Human Rights Council was, they didn't want it to criticize Israel. So I hope that the U.S. will swallow its pride and sign on to this if they haven't already.
Lou Charbonneau is the UN Director for Human Rights Watch. Lou, thanks so much for spending time with us here on VOA.
Thank you.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. President Trump will host Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan at the White House on July 22nd for official talks aimed at what the U.S. says is creating conditions for an enduring partnership and cooperation to secure a peaceful South Asia. Tribal violence has killed 23 people, including pregnant women and children, in Papua New Guinea's Highlands region. Officials say a DNA test has confirmed the identity of the first known Filipino suicide bomber in the southern Philippines. Dozens of protesters gathered outside the Japanese embassy in Seoul Wednesday to protest Japan's tightened controls on high-tech exports to South Korea. Expanded coverage of these stories and more. This is VOAnews.com. The U.S. State Department has approved by request by Taiwan to purchase an estimated $2.2 billion worth of military equipment. The deal announced Monday by the Defense Department's Defense Security Cooperation Agency includes 108 M1A2T Abrams tanks, 250 Stinger shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missiles, and over 1,500 anti-tank missiles. The agency said the package would not alter the basic military balance in the region. Richard Bush is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute here in Washington, D.C. Do you agree with that, Richard?
China's behavior over the last 3 years since President Tsai Ing-wen became president has been marked by intimidation and pressure and manipulation of Taiwan politics. It's important that Taiwan stand its ground, and it's important that we stand by Taiwan to strengthen its hand against this sort of rough behavior. This will be an expensive package, $2 billion. Taiwan's budget is a little bit stressed, and so special steps may have to be taken to pay for this. Taiwan does need to spend a lot more on defense, but at this point, it's a good signal of U.S. support for Taiwan, and I have to say I was surprised that it got through the administration so quickly.
It angers China, and China has already expressed its anger with this deal. How do you react to that, and how far do you think China might go?
China's view on this is that Taiwan is part of its territory, that the regime there is a renegade regime. Because it's part of China's territory, the United States has no right to provide military assistance to Taiwan or to otherwise interfere in Taiwan's affairs. The analogy that China would probably use is, what if England had intervened in our civil war on the behalf of the Confederate States of America? China will protest. But I don't expect that they will go over the top, because the big issue for China now is reaching some sort of acceptable deal with the United States on trade and technology issues. This is very important for China's continued economic growth. And so I think they will forbear on the arms sale in order to get back to business with American companies and American consumers.
So that is more important than the Taiwan situation as far as you're concerned?
Yes, and I think that they feel that they have the Taiwan situation under control enough, so it's a risk worth taking.
Richard Bush is senior fellow at the Brookings Institution here in Washington, D.C. Thanks, Richard. Happening now in Asia, Singapore authorities said Wednesday they had arrested a group of Myanmar nationals accused of rallying support for armed violence against the Myanmar government. It added that those found to be involved in activities of security concern would be deported. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Demonstrations in Hong Kong are set to continue after protest leaders denounced Chief Executive Carrie Lam's reluctance to withdraw a bill that would facilitate extradition to mainland China and her decision to not open an investigation into police conduct. Lam, who has characterized her government's actions surrounding the bill as a complete failure, declared the controversial extradition bill dead on Tuesday after weeks of protest gripped the nation. Lam's latest actions have failed to appease the protesters, who seek to see the bill formally withdrawn. Many of the protesters worry that the government will attempt to pass the extradition bill at a later date. Since Hong Kong's latest round of pro-democracy protests began last month, at least four people have taken their own lives in the semi-autonomous Chinese city, all reportedly left notes criticizing the government. As VOA's Bill Gallo reports, the deaths are raising concerns about a public health crisis, especially among Hong Kong's increasingly desperate youth.
This sidewalk is where a 35-year-old man fell to his death, the first person linked to Hong Kong's protests to apparently take his own life. Late at night, and nearly a month after the incident, a retired church volunteer is making sure the man's makeshift memorial is kept clean.
All my life, I have not loved anybody so deeply.
A deep emotional connection with someone they've never met. It's a common sentiment among the thousands lining up to pay respect at memorials that are becoming more common.
The Hong Kong young people are quite distressed. They see no hope in their future.
Suicide hotlines, like this one run by Samaritans Hong Kong, have seen more calls as protests engulf the city. Though not all the calls can be directly linked to politics, it does play a factor.
People are more concerned about what's going on in Hong Kong, and they are really upset about the images, especially they saw on TV or by themselves on the street.
The city has been rocked by weeks of massive, peaceful protests against a proposal that could see Hong Kongers extradited to mainland China. Smaller groups of young protesters have resorted to violence, risking long jail sentences to attack symbols of a government they see as illegitimate. As protesters get more desperate, there are fears the situation could result in more deaths.
It might be, and I'm afraid that's going to like a fire.
Some have started calling the suicide victims martyrs, raising the difficult question of how to pay respect without encouraging more deaths.
This is a problem, of course, Tibetans had for a long time with self-immolation. On the one hand, you don't want to dishonor the person's sacrifice, but on the other, it really is not something you want to encourage.
Many activists are working hard to discourage people from taking their own lives.
I bet them not to do so, because that's not going to work here. Yeah, it's not like you're protesting in a full democratic society. You're facing with China Communist, who is merciless and they don't have a moral stand.
Hong Kong's Beijing-friendly government now says the extradition bill that sparked the protests is dead. But many activists reject those comments, saying they'd continue to fight. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Hong Kong.
Coming your way, Myanmar is still a dangerous place for many, many people. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Your requests, your dedications, and interviews and performances by your favorite music superstars. It's Border Crossings. This is Larry London. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 15 hours Universal Time on VOA or online at voanews.com. You've got control. Border Crossings, weekdays at 15 hours Universal Time at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The Editors Guild of India, which represents that country's newspapers, urged the government Wednesday to withdraw curbs that have reduced journalist access to officials in the finance ministry. It criticized restrictions imposed by the newly appointed finance minister. This is she's trying to streamline the system and has denied there's any blanket ban. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. A report by the UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights finds conditions in Myanmar far too dangerous for the safe, dignified return of hundreds of thousands of Rohingya refugees who have fled to Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, to escape violence and persecution in their home country. The report was submitted Wednesday to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the Council in Geneva.
The chair of the Commission of Inquiry on Burundi warns the democratic space in the country is rapidly shrinking. Senegalese lawyer Dudu Dien says the government's efforts to convince observers the situation has returned to normal since the 2015 political crisis ring hollow. President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to run for a controversial third term in 2015 provoked deadly clashes, prompting hundreds of thousands of people to flee the country to escape threats and violence. Dien, who presented the Commission's report to the UN Human Rights Council on Tuesday, says serious human rights abuses have continued. He says the abuses have a political dimension as they occurred following the May 2018 referendum, which amended the Constitution, allowing Nkurunziza to run for at least two more terms. Speaking through an interpreter, Dien says most of the victims are opponents and members of a new party aimed at defeating the ruling party.
Members of this party are regularly subject to threats, arbitrary arrests and detentions, beatings, even torture. The party itself faces several challenges in conducting basic activities, such as organizing meetings or opening offices.
Dien says the commission has well-founded fears about the fairness of the 2020 elections. He says free and credible elections cannot occur when only the ruling party is able to operate and when independent voices are stifled. Again, he speaks through an interpreter.
The history of elections in Burundi, including last year's constitutional referendum, has always been marred by violence and serious human rights violations. Some worrying signs can already be seen in the current pre-electoral background.
The Commission is urging Burundi's government to take strong measures to renew the vitality of the democratic space, which is necessary for holding credible elections. Burundi's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Renovat Tabu, has rejected the report, which he says offers an apocalyptic picture of a plan of destabilization on the eve of the election. The ambassador says the commission has presented no proof that the election could become the scene of a serious deterioration of human rights. He says it is easy to lie when claims cannot be verified and calls the commission report an act of sabotage. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This news break from VOA Asia, Sri Lanka's government announced Tuesday it will reduce ground handling charges for airlines and slash aviation fuel prices and embarkation fees to help the country's vital tourism industry recover after Easter's suicide bombings killed more than 250 people. This is VOA Asia. The championship U.S. soccer team was honored with a ticker tape parade in New York City Wednesday, 3 days after winning football's biggest tournament, the World Cup. The U.S. women made history by winning a record 4th World Cup title Sunday, their second straight. VOA's Adam Phillips was on the parade route in New York City. He spoke with our Kate Pound Dawson about the celebration.
So let's talk about this parade. What was it like?
It was so exciting. I mean, downtown New York City, where the financial district is usually kind of a very serious place, but the place was just completely over the top with joy and confetti and balloons and signs, and just people just seemed so incredibly happy, especially girls and women.
What were the fans saying? How were they reacting?
Well, there were different levels of it. On one hand, they were just excited that the USA had won and that, the team was so excellent and people were so proud kind of as Americans. And, of course, the New York aspect, it's very iconic to have a ticker tape parade. But I think the really standout comment from girls and boys, men and women, was how proud they were that these women were unapologetically excellent and that they had really shown the world what women can do when they really set their minds to it. And it was funny because one 9-year-old boy that I spoke to with, he's a soccer player, he said, I think that these women should coach the men's World Cup team because they really know what they're doing. The men, maybe not so much, at least in recent years.
Oh, my, that's adorable. Now, you mentioned the whole ticker tape parade symbolism there. Tell us a little bit about what that means in New York.
It's a huge deal in New York because it's called the Canyon of Heroes. That's the name of it. And the first one was a spontaneous celebration in 1886 when the Statue of Liberty was first commemorated. And then after that, war heroes and all kinds of, other heroes, explorers and astronauts and others came to the fore. Anybody that a mayor really wants to honor, they get a ticker tape parade up Broadway from the harbor, basically, all the way up to City Hall, where they're usually given a key to the city, as happened today as well.
This team of women football players, soccer players, they've really made a mark. And the U.S. women have sort of led the World Cup competition since it began. I think this is now the 8th World Cup for women. What does that say about women in sports? How are people responding to that?
Well, just to be clear, this is the 4th time the women have won the World Cup, and the 2nd time they've been given a ticker tape parade. 2015, they also had one. I think it shows that not only are women able to excel on a playing field with men, and that women sports should be taken very, very seriously and are a lot of fun, and there's a lot of skill involved. But that soccer itself, football, as it's called in the rest of the world, is really coming into its own here in the United States. And so it's kind of a vindication both for football and soccer players, as well as people who feel that women have a place at the table just like men do.
That was VOA's Adam Phillips in New York speaking with Kate Pound Dawson.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study by researchers at Penn State College of Medicine in Hershey, Pennsylvania, suggests young children with atypical eating behaviors may be a sign of autism. A few examples of what the researchers considered atypical eating behaviors include those such as a narrow preference for only certain foods, being sensitive to certain food textures or temperatures, and pocketing or stuffing the mouth with food without swallowing. The study authors found that 70% of children with autism who were studied displayed these atypical eating behaviors compared to about 5% of children who did not display signs of autism. Study author Susan Mays, a professor of psychiatry, says these behaviors are present in many 1-year-olds with autism, and awareness of them could provide parents and doctors with a signal that a child may have autism. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Nelson Lopes, and our managing editor, Diane Gao. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy the day ahead.